Jimmy, Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to Improv Nerd, and this episode is sponsored by the Palm Beach Improv Festival. Improv U proudly presents the 2016 Palm Beach Improv Festival, September 8th through the 11th at Actors Rep Theater in West Palm Beach. The Palm Beach Improv Festival offers performances and workshops as well as the chance to build lasting friendships. Submissions to perform are due by July 5th. Improv U is a nonprofit dedicated to bringing the art of improvisation to South Florida. Register today at palmbeachimprovfestival.com. That's Palm Beach ImprovFestival.com. This episode is also sponsored by the 8th Annual Improv Festival Oklahoma, which will be held from September 29th to October 2nd in Oklahoma City. This single-venue festival will feature performances and workshops with special guests John Barinholtz and Rob Belushi. I taught and performed at the festival a couple years ago, and I can tell you that they have a great community in Oklahoma City. The submission deadline is July 31st. For more information, go to improvoklahoma.com. Also, if you find yourself in Chicago this summer, now is your chance to study with me in my award-winning artist-slow comedy Summer Weekend Intensives. These intensives are limited to only 14 people, so hurry because they sell out. For dates and times and more information and to register, go to my website, jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com. And if you like what we've been doing here on Improv Nerd, please go to iTunes and write us a really nice review and subscribe to the podcast because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Guess what we've got for you? Yes, we've got another great episode of Improv Nerd. And the reason I'm singing is because of our guests today, Tara DeFrancisco and Rance Rizzuto. And what can I say? These two are masters in musical improv. Their show called Here is a two-person musical improv show that they've toured around the world, thousands of shows in 9 countries. These two Chicago veterans recently got married, and before that were best friends who performed together for over 12 years. They join us for our first live show at the Beat Lounge at Second City in Chicago. But before we get to the episode, it's getting kind of exciting around here. It's also getting kind of scary. We are a couple weeks away from me becoming a father and Lauren becoming a mother, and hopefully it will happen on the same day. And you want to know how crazy I am and how I've been dealing or not dealing with my feelings? I go out to the store and I hoard paper products. I buy big quantities of paper goods, toilet paper, paper towels, even laundry detergent. Because I feel once Lauren has that little thing, once that little thing comes out of Lauren, I'm not going to have the opportunity. We're not going to have the opportunity to just run out and pick up paper towels or laundry detergent or toilet paper. Plus, Lauren's using a lot more toilet paper because she's drinking a lot more water. And there's something safe. It's like when I go to the grocery store and I bring groceries home and I put them in the refrigerator, there's something safe. I feel safe. I feel secure. And that's the same thing I feel with knowing that I have plenty of paper towels, plenty of toilet paper, and plenty of laundry detergent. All right, enough about me. This episode you're going to love because we sing. We do musical improv. And they make me look so good. And you know, I've said this over and over again. You're probably tired of me saying this. I'm terrified to do musical improv. But they make it easy, and they make me look like a genius. So here it is, the Tara and Rance episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
All right, so we're going to start with you, Rance. You grew up in Portland, Oregon.
That's true.
And you said your dad was a bland businessman who was bitter about his job.
Yes.
Did that have an influence on you? Like, I'm not going to do a job that's not going to make me unhappy?
That's a great question, Jimmy. I feel like it was a struggle as I was growing up of constantly seeing him trying to make enough money to support a family really put me in a... I'd say I'm still in a worry about money mode when it comes to things because of it. But also somewhere like after high school, it started to shift to, I don't want to be worrying about things. I don't want to be not pursuing dreams or not doing stuff that I enjoy just because I could be working a 40-hour-a-week job just for the sake of money.
You guys are married. Tara, how does Rance worry about money?
Oh, he just... I think he thinks that I sound great in here. Hey, Second City. holy cow, these rooms are nice. I think that his worry manifests as just kind of inner stress, and it's identifiable for me. I mean, I've known Rance for a long time, but it's interesting when he gets stressed because he's not like the kind of typical person that he doesn't stress out in a way that manifests in anger towards anyone. You can just see him kind of have a little bit of like... I don't know, lockup, right? Like, it's kind of a lockup sense where he feels like maybe monetarily he can't do the best that he wants to do, but the irony is we're probably doing better now than we ever have, which I think is maybe part of it. Part of the journey is figuring out how you make a living doing art, and we were talking about this at the camp this weekend, that you live to do art rather than make a living doing art, but we've been lucky enough to do both. So I think when you kind of scale your success against people that you know that you've graduated high school with or something, and they're all like, hey, I work 60 hours a week at Deloitte and Touche, you know, you're kind of like, I do an improv show and I get $20. Yeah, like, it's a totally different thing.
Get
so
it.
Yeah, we just have to write our own map, I think, and that's been a big part of our journey together.
And you guys are writing your own map. I mean, you tour with here. You're going to open this theater in Columbus.
Yeah.
You do this improv camp.
Yeah.
And when you say you're doing the best you've ever done, you're talking about financially. Because I think a lot of people who start in improv, I know when I started, to say that you would make money at improv is like...
Insane. Yeah.
But you guys are doing really well.
We're doing well.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know what really well is in this field. Is there a really well? I don't know. We're doing well because our life is primarily this. You know, that's what it seems to be. And we're not stressed as much as we were.
And you don't have day jobs, right?
We don't have day jobs. I mean, I guess teaching and, you know, applied improvisation is our day, like corporate training is our day job. But other than that, it's mostly creative or touring the show.
And applied is doing like corporate workshops.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's still improv.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still,
it's all improv.
You know?
Yeah.
So Rance, I want to talk about camp in sixth grade.
Yeah.
You went to camp and you hated it.
Yes.
But then, pardon? It was stupid?
It was stupid, and it rained the whole time, and it was stupid.
All right.
Oh, no.
I'm glad you're over that.
Yep.
Yeah,
and then
start.
You went back as a counselor, and you really loved it.
Yeah.
And one of your favorite things was leading the kids in songs around the campfire. Tell us about the first time you did that.
Well, it was I still felt like camp was stupid when I was in high school, and I got duped into doing it by a fellow classmate named James Longfellow.
Shout out.
And he knows what he's done. He was like, come be a counselor with me, because you could volunteer for a week, and then he bailed. So I ended up going to this camp I didn't even want to go to, really, and had the time of my life. Getting up in the camp, it's where sixth graders come out during the school year and learn about nature. And I learned... I was out there doing it and was just sort of nervous and hated it a little bit, but a little less than I did in sixth grade. And the staff said, we need you guys to volunteer to teach songs to the kids at campfire. And something in me said, I'll do it.
And you're like a shy kid at this point, right?
Yeah, super shy. I'd like be funny around my friends, but just really more of a, not like, I just sort of could like float through school without making anyone notice me.
Kind of like the invisible student.
Yeah, the invisible student. So I decided to do it, and I don't even really know what came over me. But they, I was like, I don't know a song, though. And so they taught me a song, and I taught it in front of the
campers. Do you remember the song?
It was Three Sharp Tooth Buzzards.
Which goes?
It's very long.
Classic.
But it's very physical, so good listening for this. it goes, three sharp tooth buzzards. Three sharp tooth buzzards. Sitting in a dead tree. Sitting in a dead tree. Oh no! One has flown away. What a shame. Two sharp tooth. And it keeps going.
And for our listeners, you actually became, you would do a sharp tooth,
yeah,
and then a tree. And then
all the anything I say, there's some sort of miming to go with it.
Performance.
And they all fly away, and you get to zero sharp tooth buzzards. And then it switches to,
spoiler.
Oh, look,
spoiler alert.
One has returned. Let's rejoice. Yay. And then you count all the way back up to three. Okay. So it's a long song.
Right. Well, that's why camp is like 2 weeks, right?
Just to get through
the song. Because of that song. Yeah. Because of that song, yeah.
So you do this.
And at the end, all the campers were like, that's once we got to three and they came back, all the campers were like, yeah. And I was like, huh, this feels pretty good. And that was the start of that. I went back, that was my junior year, and I went back twice more in my senior year, and then I worked at camps for 4 years after high school. And the entertainment side of it was what really drove me, just doing the camp.
What was it that you liked about that, getting that applause?
Boy, that's a great question. I think I went into it being nervous, and once I heard that, the nervousness went away. And the second time I did it, it was sort of just like proof of like, yeah, this is cool. So it was fun to have. It was just fun to have like a crowd just liking doing a thing, not even like I need to feed on your applaud for me, laugh at me. It wasn't anything like that. It was just sort of like. Like, I don't know, group acceptance probably.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tara, we had you on the show, believe it or not, in our very first season, 2011.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Yes, and we never asked you how you got into improv. Can you tell us how you got
Whoa.
Into
it? Whoa, you know, I probably because it's not super...
We talked about your dad, your death of your dad, mm-hmm. and, you know, we
I
were more
that.
Heavier back then.
Yeah, now we're just real light talks.
Yeah.
Real light talks. You know, yeah. I think it's because it's not a very dynamic story. I just came here... It's a brave story.
Meaning Chicago.
Yeah, okay. Meaning like I think it's probably one of the braver things I've done in my life was mm-hmm. I sort of just felt like I should go there. I knew a few people that I went to college in Ohio, and I had a couple friends that sort of pipeline told me about Second City and IO. That were just like, there's this thing here. And I had grown up watching things on television like, you know, like SNL and SCTV and... even more like independent things like that, and everyone told me that they studied in Chicago, so it just sort of reached me. And prior to that, I had known I wanted to do comedy since I was about 13, and was pretty vocal about it. In high school, I was like very class clowny, and my buddies in college that had just moved to Chicago said, "I think what you want is here," and so I, at that time, basically moved my life here without ever knowing it. Like, without knowing for sure that Chicago was the place. But I had come and seen an ETC show and a comedy sports show in a very short weekend and thought, I'm going to go. And so I picked up everything and did.
And the brave part was you got in a car, packed everything up, and just drove, not knowing anybody. And
yeah, not knowing anyone and sort of just having a gut feeling that it was the right place to be. I knew that, I think I gave myself one of those, like, hilarious parameters that many of us probably do of, I'll give myself 2 years, and if it doesn't work out, you know, those things. And now, 17 years later, it went okay. It went okay. So it's been a long time.
Had you had any improv experience before?
None.
Okay.
I had a guy in college named Mel Helitzer who was a
student. Oh, Mel, sure.
Do you know him?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, great. I was like, what are the chances of this?
Right.
He was a very like old school, hilarious, like Catskills. Sort of inspired stand-up guy that had written a comedy guide that was very popular, and he came to me at the end of school and said, Chicago has things you need to do, like you need to go there. And he also had Nikki Margolis, if you guys know that, we were the same year, and she had him as well, and he was like, you both need to move to
and
Chicago.
Nikki, of course, came and was
on
ATC,
same
did a couple
of
reviews there,
so it was a really cool intersection of this man just having an idea that this was the place. And I got here, and at the time, packed up, made my partner at the time pack up and come with me. Like, we all came here, and it was very exciting and wonderful, and kind of started off with a bang. And I took classes at IO and Second City on the same day, got comedy sports, got a team at the playground. It all kind of just, it uncurled.
How long did it take you before you were like, oh... So you give yourself two years.
2 years.
So when
Which is hilarious. I hate when students say things like that now. I'm like, 2 years? Try 10. You know, exhale.
When, like, did it start, when did it start to like, okay, I feel like I'm being successful at this?
I don't know. That's a good... I think I just had this sort of slow... grateful acceptance of every week felt better than the last, and that was enough. It was kind of, you know, the training was cool. It was exciting to me. That was at a time when, not that training's really wonderful now, but it's a different kind of, I don't know, energy inside classrooms now, because people want something from the training. They want to get something that's tangible that they can sell, or they want to like make a package of their show. And I think when I went through, I was just at the cusp of Dell, who had just passed.
Dell.
And it was very, Martin DeMott was still here, and Dell had just passed. So it was a very strange window of comedy in Chicago, where this sort of hippie love fest was still present, and the dark like push spirit of Dell was here and good too, because people were very eager, but they were all just wanting to learn. And I felt like that was the coolest thing. I remember being so excited to learn and not have any expectations. I feel like that helped me stay. And then when I got a team, it'd be like a giant celebration. I got Comedy Sports fairly quickly and had never done short form. And it changed my life. And it was like, I'm in an ensemble now. And then Second City was like, hey, do you want to do BizCo at the time, which was called BizCo? Do you want to do a tour co? I was like, yeah. And then IO, I was on all these teams and became their touring company and teacher. And it was a slow slide to the horrible demise of this.
Oh, no.
But it's now it's our life, where we don't even necessarily work so much at the theaters, but we get to tour independently in this show.
Rand, how did you get into improv?
From camp, the
camp that you just talked about.
Yeah, Outdoor School is what it's called in Oregon, and I'd work there in the falls and the springs, and I would go to community college in the summers and the winters. And the first semester that I did there, I needed like extracurricular something. I looked at the theater classes, and that Improvisation 101 and the description of it just looked like camp skits to me. So I was like, this seems like camp skits, easy A, I'll take it. And it was totally not. It was like a more old school type of improv, like improvisation for acting, where they're like, here's a script, memorize the beats, and then do I remember doing the Stygian Witches scene. We improvised it, and there were ingredients like tacos and stuff in this brew that we were making. It was hilarious. That if I hadn't taken that class, I don't know that I would have gotten where I am right now. I would have just been doing computer work or web stuff or something like that.
So you take that class, and then how do you end up in Chicago?
I did that class. I did the same class again, but it was a weird flip with a different teacher, where it was all short form now instead of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then stopped for about 3 years. I got a corporate job doing web work, flash work, this program called AuthorWare that's all we need to Google it. And while I was doing that, I got bored. And it was a good job. It was a pretty relaxed job. And while I was doing that, I got bored and looked up improv, found Comedy Sports in Portland, started taking classes there, and started playing in 99. And didn't really know much about Chicago. I didn't really look much into it. And Stacy Halal, who runs Curious Comedy out in Portland now, but she was here for a while, gave me a tape about Second City, and it was just like it was the Tina Fey ad sit sort of behind the scenes documentary thing, and I watched that and I was like, oh, I could do that. And a year later moved out here. Like, that year was spent saving up to move, and I was just like, I'm gonna go to Chicago.
Good instinct.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to feel like, oh, I'm successful at this?
I don't know that I quite yet feel totally successful.
Are you serious about that?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I treat it as like a positive thing, in that I think to never quite feel successful gives you that something to keep pushing yourself to grow and to find the, I've been doing this for a while, what am I missing? And that's led us to like cool stuff.
Oh,
cool,
man.
Cooler teaching, cooler workshop ideas, cooler show ideas.
Yeah.
So I kind of hope, even though it goes against my money thing, that I hope I never quite feel totally successful, because I feel like that would be just like, what else? I don't need to do anything else. I don't want to feel totally successful, but I'll take the money.
Had you heard that before from Rance, that he doesn't feel totally successful?
I think I know that his innate drive is that he wants to keep going, like keep growing, and not in a way that maybe lots of other people think. Like, they want to strive because they want to hit a certain mark. I feel like he wants to strive because that's what it's about. It's just more of a life push of why would we not keep evolving and changing and growing? And we've gotten to a point of being very bohemian in everything we do at this point. And I think we have the know-how to do whatever structurally sound good things in improv, but our classes have gotten more hippie-like in methodology over the years, and a lot of that is about like success is innate and what do you find that's making you happy. We're all gonna die, so what are you doing that's making you joyful? And that's been a big drive for us, I think. And so I kind of would have guessed you may have said something like that.
I feel like a lot of people come, a lot of younger people, any people that come to Chicago to do improv, they're like, have this sort of templated, like, main stage, SNL, as, like, some sort of...
Herald team.
Like, it's a map. Like, this is how it's going to go.
And
in their defense, it's becoming a little bit of a map, and that's not what we had. So maybe that made us find our own.
It's fine that that's a map, but don't look at that map. Step back further and look at the whole globe of all the roads that you could go down of. If you're just thinking about one destination, that's a vacation. If you're open to all the other ones, that's traveling through life.
You know, you talk about evolving. Like, I know for me, like, evolving as a teacher and a performer, and it's doing stuff outside of improv.
Yeah.
You know, certainly getting married, having a baby, that's going to, it's helped me. But also, like, and I love talking about it, you know, being in therapy and reading self-help books and, you know, taking a stand-up class. What are the kind of stuff that you guys do? What you're excited about this, right?
Yeah.
What were you going to say? That have you evolve?
I went through a year of just like doing like, I want to do stuff I've never done before, and found stuff like, this is going to sound like an endless stream of plugs, but Living Social or Dabble.co or places where you can take classes for cheap and just to do things. Like, I took a knife throwing class for $20. And when I was like, I want everybody listening to this just to imagine what you think someone who teaches knife throwing class is like.
And you're right.
Get that
you
in your head. Get that in your head. Cool. So I go to this like artist loft, the big metal door slides open, and it's this like live, like, are you here for knife throwing? Great, come on in. Just this like very like hippie girl's like, it's gonna be so fun. It's gonna be, and it's like,
I just imagine it's you and her. Like, no one else is set up.
It was like
up.
Three
was
other people.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was this full loft full of found object furniture.
Right.
And one drywall wall that hadn't been taped or anything, just like put up with all these little divots of knives and a wood round right in front of it with all these little divots from knives. We just threw knives. But the big one was I flew an airplane off of like 1 2-hour class that was sort of about aerodynamics.
And for a time out on this, he actually flew the, like, he took off.
I took the...
Not with help. Like, he took off.
You were the only person in the plane?
No, the pilot was in there, but she said, I thought she'd take us up there, we'd get there, and I'd get to go, meow, a little bit, and we got in there. She goes, go through this checklist. I did it, did all the switches and everything it said. She said, great, now take it down the runway. And I was like, what?
Like, that can't be legal. It can't be legal.
And then we, like, curved around. She's like, great. All you're going to do is push the throttle forward, and when you feel the plane start to naturally go up, just pull back. Oh. And I did that, and we flew out down to the Chicago skyline, up and back. And I tell you what, turbulence is a different thing when you're the person behind the wheel. And if you're afraid of flying and think turbulence is bad, like, don't ever do this.
Yeah.
So taking, doing those classes.
Yeah.
That was more than $20, wasn't it?
That one was like $200, maybe.
Okay. How does that help you as a teacher and as an improviser?
Those kind of things, those experiences you've never done, go into your toolkit, I feel. And I always tell my classes, I've plugged dabble.co too many times. but I always tell them to go do stuff you've never done, because if you only focus on improv, your scenes become about improvisers improvising improv.
The worst.
And you want to be able to do things the audience can connect to. So it helps if any, I don't know how many times I've played a pilot in improv scenes, plenty.
Mm-hmm.
Airplanes show up. But now I get it, just that sense of the emotion behind it, of like, what's it like to be in charge of a thing that could fall out of the sky because of you. And just also the simplicity of it and the ease and how it's like, really, you're at nature's mercy just as much as you're at the airplane's control.
Tara, you are incredibly busy, all right? You teach, you perform, you run an improv camp.
Yeah.
And you guys are touring all over the country.
Yeah.
But you also have some serious health issues.
I do.
Tell us a little about your serious health issues.
So I've had a smattering of health issues to my knowledge, since 2003, but was re-diagnosed in 2013, I think, with a thing called dilated cardiomyopathy, which is basically, for anyone that's, unversed in any of this, which I was, is just a genetic heart failure. So meaning that I've been in heart failure for probably like maybe some 20 years of my life or more. And not known. So my family has a laundry list of health issues. Our genes are very, very sweet and lovable, but very poor in health.
Well, and your father died.
My father died when I was 17. He was very young. My brother also had the same. He had a heart attack. My dad had a heart attack and a left anterior descending artery, which is called the widowmaker. Which is like the saddest thing ever. My brother also had the same heart attack at 40 and survived it because he happened to be driving down the street and an ambulance passed him. So he got out of the car and was like, I'm having a heart attack. And because of that, was okay. So we just have a lot of weird heart genes. And he was very fit and good at that point too. So there's a lot of strange things in my family, and I was always kind of on the watch for things like that. But I didn't expect this. A great grandfather of mine, we think, died at 26 of probably what I have. And because of that, it's been a long road of figuring out what exactly I have. It's manifested as looking like lymphatic cancer. It's looked like radiation, sort of like things that you could go through, and blood disorder at one point, and they finally have settled upon this being what I had. So I'm one of the people, one of only, I think at last count, like 18 to 19 people in the United States receiving a clinical trial for stem cell. And probably not even to benefit me, but to hopefully help somebody, and maybe including me if the timing is good, to like increase what's called an ejection fraction. So my heart doesn't pump strongly enough. It's kind of like is a very soft pump. And so because of that, my heart enlarges. So I have the biggest heart in improv,
heart.
You guys.
A real big heart.
That's on like my business. It should be on my business card. But it's such a unique, weird disease because my life expectancy is very low. But it's
How low are they saying?
Oh, they thought I would be dead within 5 years of diagnosis. I've been told I was going to die from something 3 times in my life already, including this right now. Which is such a scary thing, which is why I was pushing to the trial. You have to be a person that doesn't have an implant. I don't have a defibrillator, which is uncommon. People that have what I have are 70 or over, usually. And because it's genetic, in my case, I don't have any implants or anything, and they stopped me from getting an implant to get the stem cell trial.
Is that why you think you're so busy? Because you're like, I
think it's part
I could
of
die
it.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. I think it's a lot. It's pushed a lot of choices in my life. And I think starting with things like my father dying so early, I think it's made me very, very aware of nothing matters but joy. Like, take care of the people that you love. Try to get more people to love each other and realize that all this minutia is insane. Like, when we get concerned or self-consumed with minutia in the world, I think it's really, it's interesting and hilarious to me when someone's like, and this is hopefully it'll help someone. I'm going to say it anyway. We had a couple of students last week be like, I'm auditioning for conservatory. I don't know what I'll do if I don't get it. And I was like, you're going to do it again. And it'll be fine. And they were like, but what if I don't get it? And I was like, you're auditioning to pay someone money to take a class. And they were like, huh. And like it's like what he's saying about that world map, right? It's like we can look at things like that case by case of like, are you enjoying the life you have? Are you enjoying improvising? Do you need a gatekeeper to tell you if you're doing it well? Do you need a gatekeeper to tell you that someone thinks that your life is going okay? Or are you making the rules and saying, like, I'm gonna do as much as I can in the time that I have? I think that's what it's all about. And we're really trying to like push love as hard as we can. Because I feel like we've had enough windows where we figured it out. We figured it out at least that part. We don't have life figured out, but we definitely have the part figured out that's about like, just try to make yourself happy as much as you can and help the people around you. And I think that's kind of why we had this camp is a great example of like a pipe dream that shouldn't have happened. That happened in the hospital when I got diagnosed. So when I was in the hospital getting diagnosed with this disease, I was like, Seems like our community is really good at saying we have each other's backs. Wouldn't it be cool if we like really had each other's backs and we loved each other and did art because it's beautiful and not to achieve a certain thing? Not that achieving things is bad, but it certainly makes something different happen. So it's been a real wake-up call for me, continuously.
And you guys got married recently.
Yeah, very recently.
And you had to take that into consideration, right? Tara's health.
Yeah,
apart.
Sure.
Was that hard decision?
It strangely wasn't. She's such an amazing person, and it's so we've known each other for so long.
So long.
And it's we've always been great friends, and it was just stupid that we weren't together. And like every second with her is great. I take every second I can get.
And where did you guys first meet? How did you first meet?
We think we met at Comedy Sports in 2003.
Yeah. I was like a weird pocket sneak through spy technique that I used to get into Comedy Sports, which was everyone has to audition for Comedy Sports. And I was working at Portland Comedy Sports at the time. Knew I was moving in March. Mm-hmm. Knew that the auditions were in February, and I was also here in January for Sketchfest, and I couldn't come in February for the auditions. So in January, I guest played at Chicago Comedy Sports, and I in my head was like, "This is my audition. I have to really crush it." Mm-hmm. And then they're like, "That was great. If you ever come back, let us know." And I was like, "Oddly enough,
weird.
I'll be here in March."
But make no mistake, like everyone knew, like Rance was hot shit. Like everyone knew that he was like, hey, okay. But he really was like, he was, everyone knew who he was. And that's rare when there's like a transplant from another city to Chicago, you know, it's like, oh, welcome here. Go through every class. You know, like that's kind of how it is here. And when he got here, everyone was kind of like, Rance Rizzuto's here. Which was an interesting thing because I didn't know him yet, but it was like, he's really good in Portland, so we should like really take a look at him around the theaters. And he was very quickly placed on an IO team as well, and all that too. So it was a very quick rise for Rance, and because he was good. He was
so really 2003, good. And then I've known you guys when you were dating different people.
Yeah.
When did you finally come together?
2000. about a year and a half ago. Year and a half ago. Yeah. I heard, wow, that's sweet. Wow.
A year and a half ago.
Yeah, a year and a half ago. It's kind of like, we just watched When Harry Met Sally again, and there's this part where they're like, how long have you been together? Or when's the last time, when did you fall in love? And it was like, a year and a half ago, 12 years into a year and a half ago, or whatever, like how they've known each other the whole time. And it feels very much like that. I think we're both, it's been a year and a half of being a couple.
Yeah,
but I think we've been kind of felt like partners for a long time.
Best of friends forever.
Yeah, best of friends for a long time. Yeah.
And you got both started out doing regular improv.
Yeah.
And how did you each fall in love with musical improv?
Huh.
I think that's like one of the.
That was a weird noise. I thought. Huh. How did we?
I have never gotten that reaction with that question.
I think it's one of the benefits of. Of short form of Comedy Sports. I did Comedy Sports from 99 to 2012. Tara did it through like what, 2014?
Jeez, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Around heart diagnosis.
Yeah.
I was like, this show's
too
fast
much
for
energy.
Me. Yeah, yeah. No thanks. I did it through touring at Second City though. I did it for as long as I could.
Yeah. So a lot of games like Sing It, you know, it's concise songs without having to worry about format, and you just get comfortable with improvising songs, and mm-hmm. to put a whole piece together that seems like no big deal. It's just those songs strung together.
Yeah, and you know, we've had a really good, I think because we did regular unmusical improv, is
unmusical,
that a term? That's
yes.
Not a term. It's really helped musical improv. Right now we've noticed that people that do musical improv are so eager to do it that they skip past the scenic nature of the improv scene. Must be sound enough that you're allowed to sing. And I think that's been a big drive for us, is that we like really lean heavily on our regular improv training and design to figure out what can push us towards a good song, rather than covering up a scene with a song, trying to find out if we've deserved a song. It's kind of the drive of here, the show we do.
And what's so interesting about this, it's just you two doing the show here.
Yeah.
And most musical improv is a whole cast.
Yeah. Right. I don't know if this is true. We've just recently heard that we're the original two-person improv musical. I don't know if that's true or not, but we've heard it from a couple people that they had never heard of it before. And that seems silly to us, too, because it's also with a musical director. So it's really three, with Dave Asher, usually at I.O. Chicago.
Yeah.
On the main stage, but it's been a really cool voyage because when we go to other countries, we can just meet a musician and they play with us.
And that's what we're going to do tonight. We've never met Brian.
No, we've never met Brian.
And Brian's going to be our musical director.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do. And I am terrified.
You're going to be
I'm
so
always
great,
scared
Jimmy.
Of this. I'm totally scared.
But think about that. You're always scared of things, and it's.
Jimmy.
Everything ends up all right.
I'd rather take a knife class at this point. I would rather take a knife class.
A knife class? Well, we can throw knives at you during the song.
Well, that's what I'll be feeling during this. So tell us, we're going to do just like a scene if
Great.
We were doing here. So tell us a little about the show here.
Yeah, so here has been touring now for about the same amount of time. You guys get it? Year and a half. we have gone so far to 14 countries and we think about 45 cities with this show. So it's a very successful, happy, lovely show to tour because people are so eager to kind of come see what it's all about. And what we've learned is that we don't have a form per se.
We don't want one.
We don't really want one. And we're trying to keep that as organic as possible. It seems to happen most of the time that we open with a big opening that's trying to find a theme.
So we will do a big opening that's trying to find a theme,
right? Okay.
Don't you think that?
Yes.
Sure.
I mean, if we're
going to
scare ourselves, let's scare ourselves silly.
Okay,
right?
So right.
let's try to fly that plane, you know.
Jimmy, you are speaking our language.
Okay, great.
I'm
stalling here because I don't. What is it that we want to accomplish in this? If we're going to do the big song,
so, well, the opening song is. I think that, like Cherry said, we're looking for the way we usually explain it is we'll get a suggestion. Suggestion inspires musician of like whatever the heck they think that feels like, play it. And we take that song and go into it. All the other songs are just like whatever emotion you feel, play something that goes with that emotion rather than a premise or a genre or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're just like, what does the suggestion plus the music make you think of?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One person, usually I end up starting for some reason, and then Tara comes in with either a match or a counterpoint or some other take.
But you've never done it with three people.
Never done it with three people.
I don't think so.
Right. So, like, I don't know what you're going to do.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to plan it out, but I don't think it's going to work.
Make your best guess.
You're going to be
fine. All right. Okay, great. So
we're going to take care of you, and you're going to be
great.
You're
going
to be great.
Great.
You're going to be great.
All right.
Is this the first time you've done this? Like,
I've done different musical stuff. Music, you know, but, I mean, I'm still scared of it, you know?
Well, let's say this. We say this in all our shows anyways for our musical directors because probably 75-80% of our things, we meet the musical director, talk for 5 minutes,
and they're usually high. They're usually high. Let's be honest. Brian was high when he came in. You know,
he's wasted. Look him up.
So if this thing goes extremely well,
yes,
the odds are it was because of Brian
and Jimmy.
And if it really, we've done.
Yeah, this is
over 3,000 shows together. So if this goes poorly.
We messed up.
We did it.
These guys are like the heroes, and if we blow it, then you can come yell
sorry,
us after the show.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll go into a scene, right? We'll take a suggestion. We'll go into a scene, and then we'll discuss. That's how you do it, right?
Well, we usually just do an opening number with no scene, but the scenes would be the scenes regular
come
around
off of
that.
That
would come off.
Your
of
choice
that.
If you want to do an opening.
No.
Scene.
What do you guys? I'm gonna leave it up to you guys.
I say let's go. I'd say go with scene because it's a little. Deeper, you can get deeper with
we can
one
get emotional.
Thing.
Okay, great.
Yeah, let's do that.
Great.
You want to get a suggestion?
So we'll do a scene
no?
and then just feel the emotion and go.
Okay.
For it.
Thanks, Brian.
Until we're gonna,
hey,
we're,
Brian,
we're
stop
gonna
smoking
and
so much weed.
One more thing, because one more thing is I stall. What is your secret of finding the emotion in the scene?
Hey, slow comedy. What do you think? What do you do? What like resonates with you about that?
I would say it's finding the tone between whatever the relationship is.
That feels right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's totally it.
We just try to not let it become about the stuff or the situation and let whatever's going on, what ultimately it's about each other.
Mm-hmm. The relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. All right.
So fun.
Great. So we're going to take a suggestion.
Yeah.
Great.
Maybe you came here with a suggestion. Let that one go. Good.
It's gone.
Gone. If it loves you, it'll return. what's something that that you like that you know someone else doesn't?
Kaleidoscopes.
That's cool.
Kaleidoscopes.
Great.
I'm wasted, man. That gig was awesome. I never played the keys like that in my life.
Oh, man.
Man, you were really good, Kale.
Thanks.
I felt like I didn't hold up as well as I could have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You could have done better.
Yeah. I could have done better.
Well, yeah.
I appreciate that we talk like this after the
show. Yeah, I do too, man.
You know,
honesty's the best policy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That keeps us fresh.
Yeah.
That's why we're buddies.
Yeah, that's why we've kept the band together for long is because we're honest.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you know what? I also like, Jeff, that you didn't play the drums in it.
Because I was pissed off at you too.
That's fair.
That's fair.
That's fair.
I'm like, hey, man. I'm like, hey, man. You guys said we were all going to go out before the show.
Yeah.
And then I show up there and you're nowhere to be found.
We're nowhere to be found.
And I'm like, I was pissed. So I'm like, you know what? When you go and you play your song, I'm gonna protest. Silent protest.
Thank you for using your anger in a passive aggressive way to us.
Oh, Barbara.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Barbara.
That's
you are totally welcome,
thank
man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Like I really love our fluidity and our honesty in the band. I know I'm the weakest link. I know you have a lot of hostility towards both of us.
Yeah.
And you're obviously way better than we'll ever be.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, it's only a matter of time till I go solo, but before that happens, have some fun together and just be nice.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Nice. I don't know how that goes, man.
I
don't know how nice works, man.
You don't even have to know how nice works to know what nice is. I don't know how a rocket works, but I know a rocket if I see it.
Solid, man.
Man, that is so
solid.
You need to
man.
Put that into a song.
Yeah.
Man.
I will, after I go solo. I'll save that one.
Don't save your
this
best stuff,
man.
I just don't trust either of you musically to make my dreams come alive.
I know you shouldn't trust me, I'm a whole disaster, and you should run faster away from me.
You shouldn't trust me because I'm just a bastard. I talk shit behind both your back. And man, if I had a knife, I'd stick it back there as well.
Thank you for your truth, thank you for your truth. Thank you for your truth, thank you for your truth.
I'm a bitter
thank
old.
Thank you for your truth, thank you for your truth.
I'm a bitter
thank
musician.
Thank you for your truth, thank you for your truth.
I'm
don't
a
take
bitter
it.
Musician that is past his prime. And I see Jeff going and he's gonna be a star. And I feel real jealous.
This is why we succeed.
This is why we
exist
succeed.
In our pain. This is why we're okay, because we're
okay.
All three insane. Thank you for your truth.
Thank you for your truth.
See, I feel so much pain. I've felt it since I was a little child.
Ooh.
When my mother and father neglected me.
Let's get deep, deep, deep.
I used to play a little baby piano and they used to say, you're stupid. One day I got up and I found the baby piano was in the garbage can.
This is bigger than us right now. You've got a lot of shit right now. This is so
Did I tell you my uncle touched me inappropriately?
Thank you for your truth. Thank you for your truth.
Thank you for your truth.
Oh my God, that was fun. Now I gotta say, at one point,
can I tell you my uncle touched me inappropriately?
All right,
Jimmy Carrane.
Well, yeah. If there was one point before Rance began singing, and yeah. They're not going to pick it up on the podcast, you were looking at me.
I was.
And it was that like, hey, go and take it?
No, it was just me and character being like, you get it, man.
Okay.
You said something that was kind of like, I don't know, I feel lousy or whatever. I thought like, yeah.
Okay, because I was like, okay, she's being very kind and going, hey, you know, start the song.
No, which, I was just loving on Jimmy Carrane's character.
Okay.
We don't have any like real planned structures or anything, and that it makes it more fun in a way of like, I don't know what Tara's planning and I don't know what I'm planning.
No.
Let's just have fun.
We mess with each other constantly during the show.
We'll have
thank you,
if
Brian.
The Keys could play forever and we might never sing, and we just tell them if you play the song forever we don't sing, cool. It was just back scoring that was awesome.
Yeah.
But we don't try to like if he would have like started playing, we're like, oh, I'm a piano player. Crap, I didn't have anything yet. we let it come out naturally, and cool things happen.
So that's right. At what point did you say, okay, it's time to go into song?
That song was fun, and when things are fun in improv, they're usually from a subconscious level, which means you're not really criticizing them, which means you don't remember them so well. So I don't know why I started that song.
Yeah, we were just reading, and we've been kind of looking at a lot of the psychology of improv lately, and have been toying around with the idea that when you're self-conscious, you're not in a state of play, which is why when people are improvising and they're worried about how the show is going, the show shuts down because your play brain is turned off. And we've been trying to stay very much in a state of play so that we don't evaluate until we're off stage.
Yeah. So people that are listening, and I'm asking the question for myself.
Yeah.
How do you get into that state of play?
Maybe it's just, and you're like this too. It's more than just improv. It's the life work part, I think. I think that people are so, they're so driven to look at an improv answer when really the uncovering for me is everything around it, of am I having fun right now, is probably the primary thing. I think Craig Euler's really good about teaching, like, where are you having fun? You know, like that kind of thing. I have dinkles, you know, whatever, biats, that kind of thing. He's really good at,
Craig
he's
Euler
really,
fans
yeah,
there.
Craig Euler fans. He's really good at, like, keeping you in a state of play, and we're very much of that same ilk of if you're in a state of play and not judging yourself, you're your own worst enemy. We're all our own worst enemy of just constantly critiquing. We've been toying around with this too, that when we're looking at shows, we're learning the science and math of improv all the time, and then we step on stage and we play an improv show, and our science and calculated brain that's been looking at theory can't let go. But you shouldn't be directing your play, you should be playing. And then leave that for after the show. So I think it's almost like let your science brain exhale,
it's like
then
just,
do it after. You're going to do it after anyway.
If you focus on the play will take over. You don't need to focus on it anymore. When you're jumping on a trampoline, you're not like being like, okay, how do the physics work on this? What's the trajectory? And unless you do a bad flip or something, and then you figure out the bad trajectory. But the play takes over. You just have fun.
Great. So we're going to turn the house lights on, and we're going to ask the audience, they have some questions for you about what we just did, or about you guys, or so
love it.
Great. So, Jerry.
First time I saw here, it really blew me away.
Hey,
I,
thanks.
I spent a long time trying to figure out why, because I'd seen musical improv before.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I wanted to ask is, when you have a musical director, how much feedback do you get from your director after a show is over?
So after the show, does the musical director give you notes or give you feedback?
I don't. If we're here, no. I mean, we don't have anybody like that. We're usually with Dave Asher at IO Chicago. We both kind of just sit backstage and talk for a minute or two about, you know, how it felt, rather than kind of like evaluating the show.
Since there's no real form, it's more of a that's more of a, just a discussion of where we thought it was going or when. If mm-hmm. it's if it felt like a tougher show or kind of like, what did you think was going on in that moment? Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And when we discussed the things of how our brains were working and with Dave as well, it helps us get a little more in sync with each other and where how each other's brains work. I'd say that also works on the inverse, where it feels like a show was fun but flat, which means we weren't pushing the boundaries enough. We were sort of falling in sync with, I know how you're going to respond to this. I know how Dave's going to play here.
Yeah.
So that's where the fun in like messing around with each other a little bit.
So based on our 5-minute performance, yes. our 5-minute show, how would we discuss it after we just finished it?
I don't know how we would discuss that one because it was fun. I'd probably say I thought it was cool that, especially just like, let's just say it was just this thing that right now, you knowing how nervous you were going into it of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we did this on purpose or just sort of subconsciously came to it. Of Tara and I got to this sort of pushing this chorus really hard, which allowed you to almost sing less because you were able to sort of like
riff.
Scat and riff and
right.
say
yeah.
things,
yeah.
which takes the pressure off. Am I rhyming or am I singing the right notes, which are like silly things that people stress themselves out with?
Yeah, that's all. That stuff doesn't matter as much.
I feel like that's what happened is we just like let. It's like once you were just like getting all of your like stuff out, it's like that's the fun.
Yeah,
we'll just keep saying thanks.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And having it go.
That's right. That's right. I feel like there's less evaluation more than just the discovery of when did the show feel like it was catching fire for you and when did we lose it ever and where are those points of glory for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just listening to you discuss that, I mean, one of the things I thought was that you see people do musical improv. They'll do some scene work and then they'll do a song and the song is like in addition to the scene work.
Yeah.
But with you guys, it's like the music is the improv.
Oh, thanks.
Now we're going to sing about this and then go back to what we were doing.
Yeah.
That's what you were doing.
Thanks, that's nice.
Yeah.
Jerry not only asks questions, he always gives a compliment.
Hey, oh, thanks, Jerry.
Hey.
That's a nice
that's
thing
what
to have
love
around.
About Jerry. Great,
that's
another question
sweet.
For these guys.
That's sweet.
Yeah, right over here.
Me?
Yes.
Okay. What state of mind for all three of you do you feel you have to put yourselves into before you get on stage?
What state of mind do you have to put yourself in before you get on stage?
Is there any prepping of any kind, like a dance or like a warm-up, or just like, what do you do to be present to the person you're with?
You know what? We've been noticing that in the past couple of years here. You know, we all do warm-ups before we go on stage or whatever. And the older you get, the less you warm up, the more you're like, how was your day? That's what I was like, grizzled backstage talk.
Did you see that Key and Peele video?
Yeah, things like that. Things like that. And our team Chaos Theory, shout out to those guys, wonderful people. We do this dumb thing every time we go on stage together where we grab each other's shoulders and in a weird voice say, I want to do a show with you. And it's the silliest thing, and we laugh so hard every time because it's always like some weird mirroring exercise. And it's, you know, it's folks like Namdi Ngwe and Todd Edwards and Andiel
yeah.
Sudik and
I mean, these people have played for years.
Incredible veterans that are so funny.
But it's just at the end of us talking about... Every once in a while, we'll play a warm-up game just because it sort of naturally comes in of something silly. Of just 2 weeks ago, Tara and I were like, remember the game where you say a word to someone and they just try to say it back exactly as you hear it and
yeah.
it turns into something else?
You know that game. We fell asleep playing that game 3 nights in a row. this is a nice like window on our marriage. We were laying in bed playing that game back and forth and laughed ourselves to sleep. Like we like actually like laughed too hard that we're like, don't look at me. And we like both passed out like playing the game over and over again. And that's the kind of thing that we do. It's just like constant life bits. Life bits are our warm-up,
yeah.
I think.
I find that warm-up games are more necessary for newer improvisers who still have the nerves.
Sure, connection.
That are like, this is a show. And once you get to a point of doing so many, it doesn't matter anymore because you're going out to play, not to be judged or to have to do well or any of that. You get to play, so you don't need to like have these things to get the adrenaline out and get rid of it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you really have, you know, passed the warm-up games and you really are an experienced improviser when you start to gossip about other people before you go on the show. Or you bitch about the theater. Or you bitch about the theater.
I can't believe it.
Yeah. Or the audience. Or the audience.
Yeah. Did you see who came to our show and paid money to see us pretend?
Right, yeah. That's when you know you're past the warm-up game. We got time for one more question? Yeah, right here.
Hey, so my question is...
it almost sounds like you wrote it out. I've been waiting the whole show. This. My question is...
You were saying I got distracted.
Okay.
It had the start of like, how can this fabulous product work for me?
Yes, I remember.
There it is.
Great.
So I feel like a lot of people will be like, if you're not nervous for a show, that means you don't care. Where's like the middle ground between that? Ooh.
If you're not nervous for a show, there must be something wrong with you. So where's the middle ground of being confident and the nerves?
That's a great question.
I think it's, you don't have to be nervous before fun. If you really like playing Uno, and you know the family's going to play Uno, do you go like, oh no, okay.
Ooh.
Oh, if dad plays a draw two on me, I don't know what I'm going to do. Nervousness shouldn't be good about to come from it.
I think nervousness might be a poorly used synonym of like excited for. Right. I mean, that's for us. I think when we do a show, it feels like the reward of all the work we do up to the show. Meaning, like we teach a lot of classes, we do a lot of shows, we do a lot of studying the art and trying to push the art. And then when you get to your show, it's like this should be the fun part. You know, the part where we go out there and we get to practice what we preach. And so it should be the reward, kind of like you don't evaluate your play while you're playing. So it's, I think excited for is similar to nervous for, and nervous means I am aware and worried about the judgment from the audience coming at me and my own self-judgment, whereas excited for means I'm alive and I'm a nerve that's excited to be touched. And that's a better state.
And if you get nervous, just gossip before the show or talk shit about the theater. Yes. And get over it. We got one more question and then we've got to go. Right here. Yeah.
Tara, Ernest.
Yeah.
You travel quite a bit overseas, performing in different countries.
Yes.
Do you find that different people in different countries more receptive to a certain type of performance or humor?
Oh,
different types. You performed all over the country.
Yeah.
All over Europe and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Different receptions at different countries.
I think we have. And it's been, but it's all interesting and fun for us to play. There's a lot of countries that give you I guess what I would say is a longer leash of whether you're allowed to do improvised theater or improvised comedy. And I think that the musical falls in a beautiful kind of obtuse in between, because people are aware that it will be funny, but they're also okay with feeling things because music brings things out in people. So we land in a strange pocket of what's okay. I know that when we went to Germany, we went to two cities in Germany, and we went to Latvia, and both of those places were very open to the idea that they were allowed to cry. Like they were very open to feeling pain during musical theater, and they were open to feeling like joy and loss. And we had a really rich, strange, complex show in Riga, Latvia, and they were just like, one of our students said something that we've kept, say that thing to that.
I didn't know whether to laugh or cry, so I did both.
I didn't know if I laugh or cry.
Yes, right. And that made it, very somehow good. That made very it like good. A solid, strong quote.
Right. Yeah.
But that really stuck with us and made us kind of want to do that here. So when we got back to Chicago, it became more about like, can we make people laugh and cry? And one of the shows that, I think Jerry may have been at the show, that he was talking about that affected him, the first one he saw.
We did a
scene between a father and daughter about a father that felt like he had let people down. And the daughter was saying like, I don't care if you're working, like I want you to live the life that you've wanted. And she was a very little girl. And it was about like going off of his like planned path and doing what he needed to do. And she drew a little like treehouse for them to play in. And one of a person we'd never met before wrote us on Monday after our show on the weekend and said, I watched your show. I don't know either of you. I went into work and quit my job.
I leave to quit my job.
No.
Thank you.
It was in Chicago. And we were so touched, and we've gotten weird remarks like that over and over again. Yeah. I think because people give music a little bit more credence to speak louder. Comedy, you know, comedians are already the modern day philosopher, and if you add music to that, it makes it a richer depth of we're allowed to kind of feel things, and people really have been active off of our show that we feel a responsibility to say something. We feel a responsibility to say something inside of
We also
show.
Start off by saying, like, this improv shows are a fun place to laugh, but don't be afraid to feel all feelings.
Yeah.
Because we've done so much improv that a groundbreaking moment for me was doing a show where the audience was like, it became very serious. It wasn't even our show, it was like Storybox long ago in the San Francisco Improv Festival. And we made the audience cry at this great show. It was like being in it was so surreal just to be one of the actors in it. And the standing ovation of all these crying people at the end, I was like, huh, there's something more than just laughs to this whole improv thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed my path right there.
That's right. It's the difference between, we talk about this in classes, shout out, but I feel like it's the difference between like chugging a pixie stick and getting energy and having like a steak and getting a protein energy. It feels like there's a difference between, you can run really fast on that sugar, you know, and feel like it's giving you some energy, but eventually you will burn out, and that can feel like some improv that's fun, and then you kind of feel like there must be more. And then when you have protein based improv, it feels like I can go forever, this feels good and I'm still sustained. And that's kind of the thing we've been trying to push with here.
We've got to wrap this up, and we asked the same question I don't know if we asked it five
years
ago.
I was a groundbreaker, Jimmy.
Yes, you were. In a lot of ways, you were a groundbreaker. What is one piece of advice you would give to an improviser starting out today? Rance?
Improvisers starting out today, I would give the advice of don't try to do everything at the same time, and don't limit yourself to just improv. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you're stressing out about how good you can pretend and how well you can imagine and make believe.
Yeah.
So like give it the play that it is, and bring in other life experience to make your play better.
Tara.
You are allowed to want the things you've wanted as a child, and you're allowed to let your dream evolve and change. And if you wanted to be on something at 10 years old, that doesn't mean you have to want it when you're 30. And if you want something at 30 that you didn't want when you're 10, you're allowed to want that too. I think high tide rises all boats. Your journey is your own, and you don't have to. What's that expression of to light another candle, you don't need to extinguish your own. So like, keep raising the community up with you, because all your friends will thrive if they're good. They're all going to thrive, and you need to all stay together and know that you're a clan of people that want to protect each other.
It's real solid, Tara.
Hey, thanks.
Tara and Rance. Thank you so much. You should hear that. You should say that in German, because it would be even more powerful.
Oh, it'd be so good.
Tara and Rance, thank you so much for
being
our guest.
Yay!
Thank you.
And there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. We're like a sausage factory. We're just churning them out. I want to thank our guests today, Tara DeFrancisco and Rance Rizzuto. Their show is called Here, and it's Thursdays at 8 p.m. at the Mission Theater at IO Chicago. And this is between us. It goes no further. But as terrified as I was, and I'm less scared than I think, I'm probably amping it up a little for the podcast, I really had a great time doing musical improv with them. I'd like to thank the Second City here, the Second City Training Center here in Chicago, and Jesse Swanson for hosting us at the Beat Lounge. Also, my producer here, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. Also, Sam Bowers, who's the director of the live show of Improv Nerd. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv workshops, classes, and intensives, and the Improv Nerd blog, go to my website, jimmycorain.com. Also, go to the Improv Nerd Facebook page and like us. Follow us on Twitter at @improv_nerd. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is Improv Nerd Podcast, all one word, and see inspirational clips from our live show. We're also lucky enough to be part of the podcast collective called FeralAudio.com. Check out all the wonderful podcasts at FeralAudio.com. I'd like to thank both my sponsors today, the 8th Annual Improv Festival Oklahoma and the 2016 Palm Beach Improv Festival. And of course, I want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a
rich. I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
I help people.
She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My